In this radio feature, Tanya Haveman, director of Beyond Carbon, is going to share why, despite the credit crisis, inconclusive Copenhagen and Cancun Kyoto Protocol talks, and the scandals that have recently affected the carbon markets earlier this year, she still sees investment opportunities and, amongst others, why shifting towards implementing regional schemes as opposed to waiting for global consensus on regulation has its advantages. So Tanya, to start with, can you give us a brief overview of how carbon markets function and the status quo?
So carbon markets, you see, it's plural, carbon markets, and it encompasses a variety of both regulated and voluntary carbon markets. In this feature, I think we're going to be mainly talking about, or only talking about, the regulated markets. And those occur when governments set greenhouse gas emissions reduction targets. So they look over the historical emissions, and then they set a percentage that they would reduce compared to a base year. For example, the Kyoto Protocol uses 1990, and then this equals into a limit on how much they can pollute every year. This reduction is then met by distributing a bunch of allowances to companies or installations that have emitted greenhouse gases under identified sectors. And those companies can then emit up to that cap of allowances that they're given. And beyond that, they can either implement reduction activities themselves within their installations, or they can purchase offsets from other entities. So that can be other allowances that some companies have spare, or they can invest in sort of activities to reduce emissions where marginal abatement costs are lower, and those are typically called offsets. So in government schemes, as I mentioned, companies are given these allocations. The biggest scheme was created as a result of the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change, Kyoto Protocol, which enters into force in 2005, and that spurred the EU ETS, the EU Emissions Trading Scheme, and also the New Zealand ETS, and also the Japanese mechanism. Canada, the US, and Australia were unfortunately not part of this agreement, but certain states within these countries have now started to implement their own carbon markets. In addition, a variety of voluntary schemes exist under the guise of different voluntary carbon market standards, and they cater to, for example, if you want to offset your flight, or if a company decides that it doesn't have a legal obligation to produce, but it would like to take on a moral one. So this biggest carbon market exists within the EU, and the credits that are traded are EUAs, which are European Union allowances, ERUs, which are emission reduction units, which are credits from projects or reduction greenhouse gas reduction activities that are implemented in other countries that have obligations to reduce their emissions, and CERs, which are certified emission reductions. And those credits come from projects in developing countries that don't have an emission, that don't have an obligation to reduce their emissions. So the sort of project-based mechanisms result in these ERUs and CERs. There has tended to be and continues to be a spread between allocations and offsets. For example, EUAs are today priced at 16.85 euros, and ERUs and CERs around 13 euros. There have been massive movements in price since the scheme started. I must mention that there are several phases as well. So the first phase was in 2005 to 2007, and that was really a trial phase. We're currently in the second phase, which is lasting from 2008 to 2012. And then past that is the dreaded post-2012 or phase three, which people are very uncertain about. In August 2005, when trading started, the credits were at around 20 euros a ton, and the market subsequently, then crashed, which there was a huge furor about, due to an overallocation of credits. This current phase, prices have been over 10 euros per ton on average, particularly EUAs have obviously trended to be higher. and over the past month have been over 15 euros per ton. In terms of forecasted price, a number of the big financial institutions regularly issue price forecasts. For post-2012, there has been quite a lot of movement in their price forecasts because of the uncertainty of what's going to happen with the international agreement and regional agreements. One thing that's pretty sure, though, is that prices for EUAs are likely to be higher than for this period, and that the prices for the offset, the project-based credits that are going to be allowed into the EU, are also going to be higher. And this is because of higher targets within the EU, a stricter scheme, so that is wanting to have less of the so-called hot air in from Eastern Europe, and probably less auctioning of credits as well, and probably greater restrictions on the quality of credits that can come in, for example, a restriction on HFC 23 credits. The forecasts for phase three are ranging from 20 euros per ton to 45 euros per ton for EUAs, but obviously watch this space. Prices are due to stay somewhat lower for 2013 when these restrictions and these new requirements haven't really been put in place yet.
And how do you think carbon markets have actually withstood the credit crisis and the inconclusive sort of Copenhagen Cancun talks and the scandals? How do you think they've coped through all of that?
Well, I think there's a bit of a difference between prices in this period and prices in phase for post-2012 credits. So because we know for this period that, you know, what the limitations are and what sort of the demand is, the only thing that may affect particularly the project-based mechanisms is how much hot air that comes into the system. For example, Latvia or Ukraine selling AAUs. So these, because their economies declined over a period, and the base year for the Kyoto Protocol is 1990, they were given over-allocation, so some of that is coming in this period. And also in case the EU governments or companies decide to further restrict, even within this phase, some of the industrial gas credits. I think for this phase, it's not really been that affected by the credit crisis. There has been a slight reduction in demand because obviously demand for energy has been reduced a little bit, but also the other thing that has been noted is that for the projects, there's been a little bit less money to fund those. In terms of the following period, post-2012, so 2013 and onwards, things are a bit more uncertain. If you're within the EU ETS, the EU has already decided that regardless of what happens, it will have an emissions trading scheme, and it'll reduce by minimum 20% by 2020. And if there is to be an international agreement, that will be a reduction of 30%. New sectors will come in, like maritime and aviation, and there's also likely to be less auctioning and less of this hot air, and also greater quality restrictions.
And why do you believe investors should consider or continue to allocate carbon markets?
I think it depends quite a lot on where you are exposed. For example, within Europe, that scheme is definitely going to be strengthened from 2013 onwards. If you have any sort of greenhouse gas exposure within Europe, I think it's worthwhile coming up with some sort of strategy to manage that through EUAs or ERUs. Also, some of the other schemes that are popping up around the place, I think now is the time to come in and secure access to cheaper credits. For example, some of the states in some of the regions within China are implementing their own schemes. South Korea will implement a scheme which will start off as pretty lax but may get strict over time. New Zealand has a scheme which is up and running which will definitely not go away. And some US and Canadian states soon will have and are soon to implement schemes as well. So I think that won't go away, but it'll become more fragmented and you'll have to have more specialist knowledge. And obviously there'll be more opportunities as well for making money out of that. And in addition, in terms of more sort of on the softer side of things, obviously the trend towards environmental reporting doesn't seem to be going away, and I think that might spur more interest in using voluntary offsets as well.
And the current trading value of one carbon credit, the equivalent of one metric ton of carbon dioxide emission, is still considered by many market followers as not being high enough. Do you think this is a deterrent? And while it doesn't seem to discourage polluters to reduce their emissions. So do you see price formation or establishing a floor as being a bottleneck?
The UK is thinking about establishing a floor, a carbon price floor, which they will then change over time depending on what they see as the investment requirements to build a more green economy. In terms of generally within Europe, you've got to think that within Europe particularly, there are other policies as well that complement the EU ETS, for example, on subsidies and renewable energy, the REC scheme and other schemes that are going on a national basis. So I think you kind of have to look at it together with that. Been a little bit of an issue because obviously a lot of the money the money obviously flows to where the cheapest sources of emission reductions have been, and those have been in China and India primarily for industrial gas credits. So that money has not really, you know, been focused so much on maybe investing in European renewable energy projects. But I think things will probably be a bit stricter here in the next phase, particularly if there is no global agreement, because I think the EU scheme will be quite strict.
How should investors actually be investing? Should they be doing this via trading platforms, via funds, index products, or all of those? And how liquid is it to actually trade carbon credits?
Depends a lot on the type of carbon credits. For example, the EUAs are very liquid. The ERUs, the reduction units, it depends on their maturity. Plus, there are not a whole lot of them around. And CERs also depends on the maturity. And there's also now a differentiation according to quality. In terms of investment strategy, it depends a little bit on sort of, you know, amounts that you want to dedicate and the amount of risk and how liquid you want your investment to be. There's certainly quite a few exchanges, and they offer obviously products linked to that. They are obviously also renewable energy funds that have this as part of their component. And there've also been there are still some carbon credit funds that invest in the project-based emissions with a view to generating cheap credits, which they then can sell in the market or sell to utility. However, the future for those is looking a little bit more uncertain. And if I was going to invest in a carbon credit fund, I would look to one that had a good strategy within the geographies that are within this carbon club of the willing.
What, in your opinion, are the challenges and the opportunities that lie ahead?
I think that there obviously is a bit of a valuation issue for post-2013. Things are still quite uncertain, and the actual functioning of the scheme itself, for example, in South Korea, that scheme is still quite uncertain. But in Europe, you know, this issue of registries and the carbon fraud and carbon credits being stolen, that was a huge blow and very criticized, because obviously people don't want to invest in a carbon credit and then have it stolen from your national registry. But it looks likely now that the European Union will have a common registry, which will obviously go some way to reducing that risk. However, if there are other new markets, then their registries, you know, that might be a risk. And then obviously the other challenge or opportunity is what sort of quality and quantity restrictions there might be in a market.
Instead of sort of waiting for global regulation, if you will, there seems to be a trend towards regional allocations, if you will, and regional regimes. So could you possibly elaborate on fragmentation and what you think that holds in store?
Yes. I don't think that this next meeting in South Africa in November, December will really yield a global agreement. However, some countries and regions have committed very strongly to having a post-2012 scheme. But the extent to which those are going to interact is still up for discussion. So, for example, if the EU will have an agreement with other European countries that are maybe thinking that they want to join the EU or accession countries, the extent to which the EU will, you know, some liquidity with the New Zealand credits, which seems pretty likely. So I think that there are some opportunities for developing cheaper credits and selling them, you know, to the more expensive parts and making a profit that way. But I think it depends a lot on, well, I think you have to be very quick in terms of reading and understanding the policy. And I think that there will definitely be some shifts in terms of who the big carbon market players are and who's making money in this market. I think, you know, now's the time to really be watching what's happening and also to be lobbying. And a lot of the big players are.